So why are you running?
You know, it's funny. My husband and I had that conversation some time ago, and I said, you know, I don't want to win the war, but I want to win the battle. And I think we're in a time in the state of Illinois where there's a lot on our plates, and I appreciate the knowledge that I have, what I've learned over these years, and I think I have something to bring to the discussion, and I think that that's important.
Yeah, you've been. This is your eighth year in the legislature.
Technically it's my eighth. It's really the seventh. I came in December of 2010, so here we are in February of 2018.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think you have learned over that time?
Wow. Well, I've learned that Springfield has changed a lot. My colleagues and I were having a discussion the other day on, you know, what it was like 20 years ago for many of them and what it is today. There's not as much compromise as there used to be. We were also financially a lot healthier. Things were easier then. They're not that easy now. So, you know, people say, well, it's no fun anymore. Well, you know, if you came for the fun, you need to get back on the bus because most of it isn't fun. It's a lot of hard decisions, hard discussions, hard votes. And I think I personally have learned that you better reach out to your colleagues on both sides of the aisle and in both chambers if you're going to have any discussions of any substance and try to work towards a resolution on an issue. It's imperative. And quite frankly, it is for many of my colleagues that are in the majority as well. You know, there's very little difference on a lot of issues when it comes to downstate Democrats and downstate Republicans. So you've got to work together.
Why do you suppose compromise has become such a dirty word, not just in Springfield, but even on the national level in politics? It seems like compromise is no longer acceptable.
I think, Rich, a lot of it has to do with the fact that we have seen people come in to politics, be it in Washington or in Springfield or even across the U.S. in the state houses. And there are many individuals that are extremely far to the right, and there are individuals that are extremely far to the left. And that leaves the middle a shrinking population, if you will, and those are the folks that have to negotiate and compromise and try to accomplish something.
A moment ago, you mentioned having to take hard votes. I imagine one of them was on the income tax increase last year.
Absolutely. I would say, without a doubt, it was the hardest vote I've had to take since I've been in the General Assembly.
6 months later, do you still feel it was the right vote?
Absolutely.
Why so?
Absolutely, it was the right vote. You know, Rich, we were at a point where we had to make some very tough decisions. Illinois was on the verge of junk bond status. And, you know, to some folks that said, well, you should have let it burn and let the federal government step in, that was not going to happen. And we were going to be on a par with Venezuela and the only state in the U.S. to ever reach junk bond status. At that point in time, our financial condition in our state was going to absolutely go down a hole that we would not have been getting out of for a long, long time. And so, you know, for folks that say, well, you increased my taxes, yes, but if we had done nothing, that tax rate was going to be anywhere between 6.5% and 8%. So at that point in time, it was certainly the lesser of all evils.
Why would it have risen to that level?
And so the reason it would have, when we passed the budget, we had a backlog of bills of $15 billion. Had we done nothing for another year, because we are mandated by courts and continuing appropriations to pay at a certain level, that backlog of bills would have been $24 billion, and you couldn't have touched it with a 4.95% income tax.
Are we making some progress on that now? There are still overdue bills, and the state is still
sure.
paying a good deal of interest, isn't it?
Well, we are the agreement when the budget was passed was on many of those bills we were paying 12% interest. And so when, you know, I made the comment at one of our meetings, I said, you know, maybe we could even see something about 4.25%. And some of my colleagues looked at me and said, well, you are dreaming. We got just a little over 3% on some of those. So the agreement was we would pay down the bills that had the highest interest rate and the worst backlog. So we are currently we have paid off about $8.5 billion because of a federal match for many of those Medicaid dollars. We receive a federal match on those. So right now we're still at about $8 billion. So we can't go out and start spending and spending and spending because we still have a backlog of bills that we have to get under control. In a state the size of Illinois, if you're carrying about $3 billion in bills, that's would be considered acceptable. You'll never be at a zero balance. It's not a possibility. And so we have a lot of work still to do. We cut about $2.5 billion out of our budget, and you know, now we just have to be very careful on any spending going forward.
What would you like the state to do to further cut into that backlog of bills?
Well, I think just by nature, we will continue to pay down that because that the tax has risen and we do have more money available in that way. We just have to be certain that we are diligent in paying it down. And as our bonds begin to be paid off, the money that we were paying there should go to pay down more and more of that backlog of bills.
So eventually, the revenue from the income tax hike will help pay down.
Sure, it will.
To an acceptable level.
Sure. I'm hopeful. Yes, as long as we don't increase programs and that kind of thing. Sure.
All right. What do you think has been the major legislative accomplishment of your current term in office?
I've been focusing a lot on long-term care. And some of the issues that we have in the state of Illinois, providing for our seniors that are in and those with disabilities that are in long-term care. There's a backlog of application approvals that is nothing short of insanity. We have some individuals that have been in long-term care without being approved for their Medicaid that, oh, by the way, many were Medicaid eligible when they were in the community. And they have waited over a year, some as long as 2 years, for that approval. So I have worked with many of the long-term care groups and negotiated with the departments, and we've passed legislation that basically has told them you've got to get your ducks in a row and you've got to get these applications done or else. So that's been very helpful. It's been very helpful. Hasn't resolved it totally, and we continue to work. I had a meeting for several hours yesterday on the same issue. And I think aside from that, having a new funding formula for K-12 education devil's going to be in the details there. You know, we see numbers for our schools all the time, and then the next memo from State Board of Ed is ignore those numbers because they weren't right. We'll be getting new ones out to you shortly. So I'll be interested to see how that's going to work and how it's going to help the schools in rural Illinois. And hopefully we can have a more fair and equitable funding formula for our schools.
Are the school districts in your district generally in favor of this education funding reform?
Generally, yes. Yes. Most all of the schools, I would say all of the schools, I believe when we get the final numbers, will certainly get some will get significant more dollars. Others will. Everybody wins in this area. Yes.
And what about transportation funding for rural school districts? I heard from West Prairie last week they still have not seen any money for this school year.
Yes, that's one of the issues that we keep asking. Where are those vouchers? Have they gone to the comptroller yet? When are we expecting those payments? That's a huge issue. For school districts in rural Illinois, you know, when you look at Schuyler Industry, they have over 400 square miles in their school district. They depend desperately on getting their transportation dollars. So I think that's one thing that there's enough of us that are creating noise about it that I'm hopeful those funds will be shortly coming.
Yeah, it seems these rural districts were encouraged to consolidate, which made them larger geographically.
Right.
And now they're not getting the transportation funding they need
right.
to cover that large area.
Yeah. And yet many of the school districts in the northern part of the state, they have millions and millions of dollars in their transportation funds. You know, we'd love to have an excess of funds in that monies in those funds, but we don't.
As long as we're talking education, what about higher education in the budget? Do you feel like funding for higher education has been stabilized? And if not, what more needs to be done to stabilize that?
You know, I think we got a quick – I won't say a quick fix. We got some relatively stable funding in this budget. But again, Rich, higher ed took a 10% cut. Higher ed didn't have 10% to cut, quite frankly. And so as we go forward, you know, if we're putting more money into education because that's our priority, education doesn't stop at 12th grade. Education has to include higher education, be it a community college or be it a four-year university. So as we go forward, we have to build our funding for higher education to a higher level than it is right now. But we also have to fix some of the problems that we have in Illinois with attracting students. Our enrollment numbers have suffered terribly across the state. We've been working, we have a higher ed working group. It's bicameral and bipartisan, led by Senator Pat McGuire. We have been meeting now for several months, hearing from not just our universities and our community colleges, Illinois Board of Higher Ed, Student Assistance Commission, but then entities that all have a dog in the fight, everybody that has an interest in higher education. And so, you know, they may be a lobbying group, they may be a think tank, whatever they are. We've been listening to these folks we will meet again next week on Thursday, I believe it is, and we're trying to identify where are the biggest issues and what are other states doing that they're able to attract students from Illinois? What is Illinois missing that we could be doing, and how do we implement it? So I'm hopeful that this group, it's a lot of people that are interested in doing what we can to help higher education in the state of Illinois. So I'm hopeful that when we have our report and our suggestions and our legislation together, that it is in fact going to help attract students back to Illinois and students from other states as well.
Do you agree with the idea that perhaps not every college should offer every program or major, that certain programs should only be offered at certain universities?
Well, let's take Western, for example. Western has a law enforcement department that is second to none, absolutely second to none. Our agriculture is incredible. I mean, we can boast about a lot of the programs at Western Illinois University. Nursing is another one. There are several universities and even community colleges that offer a 2-year program in nursing. Would I like to see every university have a law enforcement department that would rival Western's? No, I wouldn't. But I think that you have to look at certain programs, and I will take nursing. There is such a need all over the country, really, for nursing, that I think that's a program that is valid to be offered in many of our universities. The thing that we oftentimes lose sight of is, if that student isn't mobile, how are they going to get that program, that degree that their heart is set on? So I think that there are certain areas that we can look at and say, I think that's a degree that can be supported across the state, and there may be others that let's let someone else specialize in that. We don't all need to have a dog in that fight.
What do you think is the biggest challenge facing the 93rd Legislative District right now, and how would you go about addressing that challenge?
Well, I think, the biggest challenge that we have certainly for our area is higher education. What are we going to do going forward? And how is it going to help the students that are looking for a higher education in this area? You see the yard signs with the right choice, and you see the billboards for Western, but it's obviously not enough. So we have to do more. We have to do more to boast up what we're all about here. So I think that is certainly one. I hear continually from businesses, my workers' comp rates are out of sight. I have a business across in Iowa. I pay a third of what I pay in Illinois. So I think that, those are some issues that if we're going to do something to bolster our economy, which basically it's all going to be about how we bolster our economy, those are some things we need to look long and hard at.
You're including higher education as part of the economy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what higher education does for a community like this, and not just Macomb, but, the surrounding area. And I think the same can be said for Charleston, for Carbondale, for Normal, Bloomington. I think everyone would agree that has a university in their community I think everyone would agree, yeah, that's a huge part of our economy, of our local economy. Absolutely.
Do you think the state should legalize recreational marijuana?
No.
Why not?
So I, as part of the State Ag and Rural Leaders Group that I'm a part of, a few years ago, we were in Denver for a meeting, and it was just the year after Denver had passed recreational marijuana. Their homeless population has exploded. Every other corner was a tarp city. Storage units are full. The challenges in the discussions with the growers and with the dispensaries and the retail outlets, if you were, they face some real challenges because it's not legal at the federal level. For example, they oftentimes pay their employees in cash. They have trouble finding a bank that will accept their money. Insurance companies to insure their business. They won't tell you who their insurance company is because they just won't. When they pay their taxes, they take them across the street to the Federal Reserve Bank in cash. There's so many issues that just haven't been thought through that for me, I think that is something that needs to be done at the federal level. Let them figure it out. And quite frankly, the state of Illinois, they haven't got medical marijuana right. So they're certainly not ready for prime time.
What is the state doing wrong with medical marijuana?
So the Department of Public Health has been and Rich, I know that you know, but maybe your listeners aren't aware. Medical marijuana is a much different product than recreational marijuana. Medical marijuana has an extremely low THC level. It is the products are developed to bring a medical relief to a certain condition, be it a child with seizures or whatever that might be. So the courts have told the Director Shaw at the Department of Public Health that there are certain conditions that he has yet to approve for medical marijuana in the state of Illinois, and he has been directed that he needs to approve those conditions. And he will not do it. So until we get someone in there that understands what these products are, what they do, who they help. You know, we have all these discussions about the opioid crisis. Well, maybe if we weren't prescribing so many opioids, and if we looked, is there an alternative in a medical product, in a medical marijuana product? Yeah, I think there is. So we haven't gotten that level of it right. So we're certainly not ready for anything bigger than that.
We are speaking the day after the governor's State of the State address. I saw on Facebook this morning you wore black yesterday in support of the victims of sexual harassment and abuse. What sort of legislation would you support to address the issue of sexual harassment and abuse in this state?
So, Rich, I am on a task force, sexual harassment task force, that there is one in the House, there is one in the Senate. We actually met Monday. Our last meeting was Monday of this week, and we continue to meet. We will have a report due to the General Assembly And at that time, I think that there will be we will partner with the Senate on what things they have learned and issues we have to address and how we address them legislatively. But for today, I think it would be improper to there are some of our colleagues that they're going to introduce this legislation and that legislation. Until you have the whole picture, don't get it wrong if you can take some time and get it right. So I think that we will have a bigger picture and a better understanding on exactly what issues we need to address and how to address them legally.
Do you feel there's a culture of sexual harassment at the state capitol?
Well, Rich, there I'm sure that there is. I have never been sexually harassed in the Capitol, but of course, I'm one of the older members too. So, I'm not going to say that there isn't. I'm absolutely certain that there is, and it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong on every level, not acceptable. And so, I think it is not something that we can ignore. We have to address it. It's a shame. It's an absolute shame.
This year is a little different for you because you face an opponent in the primary this mm-hmm. year. What are the challenges in terms of having to raise money to deal with the challenge of having someone run against you?
Sure. Very expensive. Extremely expensive. My primary opponent has been promised $500,000 from the people in Chicago that are running his campaign. They certainly have the money. And for me, I always try to raise my own money at my own fundraisers. And not depend on outside sources to help with that. I've always been a supporter of House Republican Organization financially, and so when they can help me, that is certainly very helpful. Right now, we are having to spend a lot of money to defend. Most of the twisted truths, if you will, that are coming out. So,
you did receive some help from the governor and/or the Republican Party in fall of 2016, correct?
Correct. Not really the governor, but the House Republican Organization. Yes.
And do you have some of that cash left that's helping you fund your current campaign?
I wouldn't say so. No, I am very well aware of the fact that you need to raise money, not just when you have an opponent.
Are you I'm kind of curious, are you surprised by how much you're having to raise? When you took this seat 7 or 8 years ago, did you envision you would have to raise this much to hold on to this seat?
You know, the whole culture of this has changed considerably in the last, I don't know, at least 6 years. It is surprising to me. It is surprising to me. I won't lie to you.
Why do you suppose that culture has changed?
I don't know. I think that, and certainly in this case, you have, these groups out of Chicago that they think the answer is to get these far-right thinking individuals into Illinois. I talked to you about that earlier. You get the far right and the far left. Who's left in the middle to actually do the work?
Where do you place yourself on the scale? Are far right, right, moderate?
I would place myself as moderate. Yep.
I'm going to be moderating a League of Women Voters forum February 20th. Do you anticipate you'll be participating in that or other forums?
I am hoping to. I have a I think it's going to come down to I need more details about when exactly the time is because I have two places I have to be there that night, and they're not both in McDonough County. So, yes, I'm hoping to work that out.
Why should someone vote for you in the Republican primary?
Well, I think that first and foremost, I think if people know me, they know I'm going to tell them the truth and not going to lie. I think that that's something that's extremely important. And also the fact that I have the best interest of the 93rd District and the constituents in the 93rd District at heart.
Thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.